Oh, you got a drink tonight.
I'm always drinking, Shams.
No.
Also, I have water.
You know how I was drinking adult beverages?
No, I'm talking about when we're podcasting.
You are?
Well, not, no, probably not.
That's what I thought.
All right. Well, welcome everyone to Required Viewing. We've already started the recording. Yeah, so this is going to be one of our lowest preparation episodes that we've ever done. I don't think we've really...
Very low bar, and that's a very low bar for us.
Yeah, I mean, the way we usually do this is just like, we have some random shows that we want to talk about, and we try and string together like a half-assed theme to like, you know, tie them all together. But we didn't really have time, or I think like, we just, our level at which we care, like if we didn't care before... during this pandemic, we don't care anymore. So
in my defense, it was the last 30 days were Ramadan, and I was fasting. And when I'm fasting, despite what people think, it's actually somewhat harder to just binge watch because you're just kind of so focused on food that that's all you think about. And it's in some ways, like once I ate, I just was passed out for the day. So I was in a somewhat unique position that I wasn't consuming as much and had a desire to consume as much TV as I maybe normally would.
Yeah, that sounds pretty rough.
Yeah, the not drinking. Yeah, when you're thirsty and you haven't drank for like 16 hours, like even watching Tiger King doesn't, I mean, anything sounds horrible.
Dear Lord. All right. Well, I guess, I don't know, what I'd like to do, if you're cool with this, is just to chat about the current state of television. And spoiler alert, it's not very good.
Oh, yeah, it's really, really bad. And it's not looking good long term because of the COVID situation.
Yeah, we're kind of like, I don't know, all the shows that are airing now must have been already like pretty much wrapping up before this whole thing happened. But like, I mean, we talked about Westworld on the last episode, and since then, the finale of season 3 has aired. And honestly, like, now I want to go back and revise that and put Westworld in the ugly slot. Like, I haven't seen Altered Carbon season 2, but after the finale of season 3 of Westworld, I genuinely think it's probably worse than Altered Carbon season 2.
I still haven't watched Westworld, and I don't know when I will. I mean...
Season 3? Just don't. Like, yeah. It was abysmal. And that's like, so that's like HBO usually, right? Like usually HBO is pretty consistent quality, or maybe not each thing they do, but like they usually at any given time have something really good. And Westworld 3 was supposed to be the flagship, and that ship sank straight to the bottom of the ocean. I mean, what else are they doing?
By the way, this is somewhat off topic because we agreed on a certain topic for this episode, but maybe the next episode we can talk about it because it'll be released by then. I personally think that HBO Max is going to ruin the HBO brand.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with that. But like, as far as just like normal prestige HBO shows,
that's the point, is that they're spending so much money on that brand and not on the real HBO prestige brand.
Oh, is that what it is? That would explain this, because like, I don't know. The only other two HBO shows on my radar are Run, which I just finished. It was only 7 episodes, and I literally just watched the finale of season 1 about an hour ago, and it was real disappointing. Like it was a good show. Like it had moments of quality, but it was, I don't know. Did you watch any of that?
No. So the thing about that show is I never heard good things, and then it was one of those shows where I was like, well, if this is a show that like just gets canceled after one season, then why should I invest time into it?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty short because it's 7 under half hour episodes. I think they are. I might be making that up, but like they're shorter episodes, and there's only 7 of them in the first season. But it was like, I don't know, like it was an enjoyable show, but it was not HBO level quality, and I felt like it kind of like changed the show that it was trying to be a couple times. Like I think the last couple episodes even like were bordering on like almost like a Fargo like tone, and that's not how it started.
Oh, okay. I was like, that sounds good though.
Yeah, those parts were good, and I think well, specifically when Phoebe Waller-Bridge has her character kind of shows up and I don't know, has like a Fargo like.
Oh, she
yeah, she is.
Oh, spoiler.
as an American, I won't say any more about like what she is, but basically like her character and the character that she has the most screen time with, people are kind of talking about like they'd rather have a spinoff show featuring just them than the actual show we got, because I don't know, it was just all over the place. And then the other thing on HBO that was, I think, supposed to be a prestige drama was what's his face? Ruffalo's
Ruffalo show. I was excited when that project got announced like a year and a half ago, because Derek Cifuentes or whatever, the guy, the director, he's the same guy who did Blue Valentine and Place Beyond the Pines. So I was like, yo, this is gonna be dope. And then like I saw the trailer and then the reviews are just like, I guess it's not dope.
Yeah, we're talking about, what's it called? I Know This Much Is True.
I Know If This Much Is True.
I think it's I Know This Much Is True.
I know.
Right. Well, neither of us have seen it, but I'm in the same boat as you, where like I heard it was like supposed to be a big thing. And then critics' reviews came out and it just like, nope.
Yeah, you're right. It's I Know This Much Is True.
And it's just starring Mark Ruffalo, right? Like he plays
twice because he's twins. Yeah.
Yeah. He plays himself and his twin. That's pretty much all I know about it. So yeah, I mean, that's it. Like what else is going on HBO? Like nothing. And then you look at Amazon, like
Homecoming season two.
Yeah. Homecoming season two. Haven't watched it yet. I'm still deciding if I will. What I've heard is that, again, like there's another thing that like, Sam Esmail took his hands off the wheel, because obviously he had other things to direct that turned out brilliantly. But I'm very disappointed, because I think Homecoming season one could have been a limited series and ended pretty perfectly. And I don't know how, like, it's just, I don't know. I'm told if you go in with low expectations, you can enjoy it, but that's not what I want out of Homecoming season two.
I mean, I just don't really, I'm kind of surprised they even made a second season, given that it never got the award, the critical award love that they were aiming for. And they just got rid of like the main cast of characters involved. So it's like, what, who's going to watch the show? Like you and I are like one of the biggest Homecoming fans that I think of, and we're not interested in it. So I'm like, who's going to be interested in the show?
Yeah. Like, I don't know. For me, the thing that made it great was, I think actually, if I recall, my little Facebook review of Homecoming season one, said something along the lines of, this show is basically if like the ghost of Alfred Hitchcock came like back to life and possessed a director to direct something, this is that. And season two, like, I don't know, to do it without that, I guess like Sam Esmail is basically the ghost of Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah, well, Sam, no, but I think you need the Julia Roberts also as well. Like having that movie, having a cinematic legend, right? Which is also in some aspect like a Hitchcockian aspect, right? The Hitchcock girl, right? Like you need that type of, not just like you need that type of actress or actor. And like, no offense to Janelle Monáe, whatever, but like she's not Julia Roberts.
And I mean the guy, I forget his name, but the guy was the chemistry between them also is what made it, not just Roberts. Yeah. Yeah. So that's season two. And then like the other big thing on Amazon is Upload, which I mean,
yeah,
you
so
actually
I
got suckered into watching.
I saw the first episode because all my friends were talking about it. And I'm just like, why is this a shitty Black Mirror? And why is this a shitty version of like the mediocre version of Black Mirror? So Upload is basically a ripoff of San Junipero to some extent. It's a TV show about a guy who gets killed early, but he's agreed to digitally upload his consciousness into this digital afterlife. And then it's like more of a comedy, right? Because it's like a romantic comedy, because like it's dealing with the fact that like his alive girlfriend is still trying to like be his girlfriend through this digital afterlife, but then he falls in love with this HR representative who's supposed to help him in this digital afterlife, who's also still alive. And then he's dealing with like random shenanigans during it. Oh, and then it turns out the twist is that he may or may not have been killed. He may or may have been killed, like, in mysterious ways. So it's like juggling comedy and a mystery and then like sci-fi, and it just falls flat completely to me.
Yeah, everything about that sounds completely awful. And then I don't know, the other big television event, I don't know if you've been following this, but like there were a lot of hopes behind, I was about to use the pun, the Snowpiercer train.
There's the... Oh, so I came out yesterday. I actually haven't had a chance to watch. I haven't even seen the reviews or anything for it, but I'm still going to watch it just because I really like Snowpiercer.
Yeah, reviews are pretty bad. That's why I haven't
watched it. Yeah, I'm not totally surprised. I'm still probably going to watch one episode just to say that I watched one episode of Snowpiercer, the TV show, and then confidently say this was a bad idea and not watch a single frame of it again.
Yeah, apparently the production was a shit show on that. Like they brought in a new director after they fired the first director or something like that, and then they reshot the pilot and changed, like, they changed characters who had already been cast, and actors had to like play completely different characters. So I don't know. I'm not surprised.
Well, to be fair, Game of Thrones did that as well, but that obviously turned out a bit differently.
Well, I mean. Did it in the end?
Maybe not in the end, but at least for like 5 years it did.
They should have stuck with the original director, whoever it was. And then I don't know, the only other like big show that I'm tracking is like you got Killing Eve, also season 3. I think the first season came out around the same time as Westworld season 3, so these shows have been running kind of in parallel. And I don't know, like, it's not bad, but third season is just kind of, I feel like it's like coasting / slowly losing quality. Not as fast as like Handmaid's Tale and some of the others, and definitely not as bad as Westworld season 3, but it's just not, it like literally is missing the spark of like the first season.
Is it, do you think it's because the success of the show, they're just trying to ride on the coattails of the show, or that the show's just, it should have never been the song in the first place.
The second one. I think they don't understand what made the first season such a phenomenon. And that is specifically the like chemistry between Jodie Comer and Sandra Oh. And even in the second season, I feel like they kind of like, I don't know, they brought them too close together. And now the third season is overcorrecting for that, in that they're like not on screen together almost like at all. So it's there have been a couple of like, well, let's say one kind of standalone episode featuring just Jodie Comer where Sandra Oh is not even in it, and that one was pretty good, but it's like what made the show good was their chemistry together, and they're kind of like not doing that for some reason. Granted, there's still two more episodes, so I haven't seen the no one's seen the finale yet, unless you got an advanced screening. So there's still hope for it, but it's just not, it's not what the first season was.
Yeah, that's a common, I feel like maybe we can do, maybe this is a brainstorming idea for another podcast and we'd have to sit down and research more, but I feel like that's becoming more and more common. And maybe I'm just more aware of it than, maybe it's always existed, but I feel like we have more and more shows which are just like not losing, like not realizing that like what made them great in the first place, and like losing that touch.
Yeah, like Westworld.
Like Westworld, yeah. And it's like, it's almost like, I feel like it's become easier to have a great first season than it maybe used to in the past, but it's become harder to have a great third season. Whereas like if you look at older shows, a lot of older shows people be like, you know, season 3 was the best, or season 4 was the best, right? Like, if you look at a show like Breaking Bad, The Wire, even Mad Men, like, some people would say the first seasons of the shows are great and maybe the best, but most people would pick other seasons outside the first season. Whereas now I feel like it's becoming more and more common that the first season is considered the best season, and then everything else is downhill from there.
Yeah, it's been pretty common. At least like all of the big shows that rose in like 2017 and 18, I think that tracks.
Yeah, like last 5 years, right? So that, like, the only way to, like, maybe go against that is, like, if you do a show like Fargo, which is, like, a anthropology type, so it's, like, every technical, like, you can maybe like the second season more than the first season because it's kind of, like, a completely different show.
Yeah, yeah. Well, those, yeah, though, even some of the anthology series have been kind of slowly diminishing. Well, I guess, I don't know. People have things to say about the second season of American Crime Story, but I think it was great. It definitely wasn't as good as the first, but it was
I think we'll see how the Clinton one is whenever that comes out now.
Yeah. Oh, right. So that's not going to be timed with
the No, election. It can't. I mean, unless, so this is maybe a good segue. Like, I think a huge kind of depressing aspect about the impact of Corona on, you know, entertainment is that we're basically getting all the content that was ready pre-Corona out, like, now. And once summer really hits, we're pretty much going to be starved because any scripted show, at least, will not have finished. We already seen that impact. You and I had said this before. Fargo season 4 had not finished. It had finished, I think, like 80% of its season, and it had a halt because of Corona. So while that is a show that you and I should be reviewing and talking about right now, but it has not aired, and it probably won't air until maybe later this year at the earliest. So a show like American Crime Story, what was it called? Was it just called Clinton? I don't even remember.
Impeachment.
Impeachment, right. Yeah. So that was a show that was filming right now, and it was aimed to be released, I think, September and October. And there's just no way they're going to have that ready by this year. Unless they somehow, like, even if they were to start filming in the next month, they would have to ramp up the speed of the process, which just doesn't seem feasible. So we're about to hit a stretch right now in the summer where we are not going to have a lot of quality scripted shows because they just literally won't exist. There'll be nothing to show, right? Like, I think we're going to get a lot more reality and non-scripted shows because I think a lot of those are, like, kind of in the back burner for a lot of these companies and they're just, like, ready to unleash them. But in terms of scripted content, once June and July hits and we're still on a kind of production halt, there's nothing to show, to release.
Yeah. And it's a real shame that a lot of these usually very high quality content producers are not ending on a high note, with one exception. And this is
great segue.
Yeah. Thank you. This is like, just so strange to me. So as I was putting together a list of shows I've been watching that we could maybe talk about on this episode, I realized something. All of the shows that I'm actually, like, really into and I think qualify as the title of this podcast, Required Viewing, have been on Hulu. And to make it even stranger, it's not just the FX acquisition. Like, only, I think, well, if you count Devs. So obviously we talked about Devs on the previous episode, which was one of the first, I think it was the first FX on Hulu.
It was among the first wave, yeah.
And now I'm looking at the next ones and two, yeah, okay. So two out of the four are FX, but the other two aren't. They're just straight up Hulu Hulu and some other co-production. But Hulu has just been an oasis of high quality in this pandemic season where everyone else, I have no idea what they're doing. We didn't even talk about Netflix, and I don't want to even get started on Netflix.
There's nothing to talk about Netflix unless you're like,
yeah, Ozark, everyone's just watching Avatar and Community basically.
Yeah. Hasn't everyone ever already seen Avatar?
I thought so, but, like, I don't know. I don't know what people were doing for the entire when was the show even
when on? You were in high school and college, what were you doing? Because you had all the time in the world to watch Avatar, and it was, yeah, the reruns were on Nickelodeon constantly, so you, yeah, like, what were you doing?
And Korra, and now the Dragon Prince. But yeah, I don't know, that's weird. I guess the one good pickup Netflix had, which I'm very proud that I recommended the show way before Netflix got it, is Waco. that just got, that just blew up when Netflix, well, when they put it on Netflix.
Oh, wait, that wasn't a Netflix original?
No, that was, you can see that on my best 18 new shows of 2018 list on my blog. It was originally on some other thing. I don't even remember what, but, I think it was like, maybe like TNT or it was like really obscure.
Maybe Showtime. Some shit.
I think it was Showtime. But yeah, I ranked that relatively highly in best new shows of 2018. And no one had heard of it. It wasn't well reviewed and they put it on Netflix and now it made, you know, it was like one of the most watched things there for a while. But other than that, like Netflix is just coasting on like library content or like acquired content, which is weird. Like that's not normally the Netflix way.
No, that is a Netflix way. That is
no, actually, like Netflix has been trying to get them off of that since they.
No, but that's the problem. Launched. I mean, the thing with Netflix is that they 80 like what they do is 80% of their content is library content, and then what they do is every 2 weeks they have one new original content that like does well, and then after 2 weeks no one gives a shit about it anymore.
Oh yeah, speaking of which, Tiger King.
Yeah, I mean Tiger King's one. A good example in terms of like a, maybe not a TV show but a movie is the movie Extraction, which with Chris Hemsworth, which was big for the first 2 weeks, and then after the first 2 weeks, no one gives a shit about Extraction anymore.
Right. Yeah.
So Netflix's model is that 80-20 rule where they're 80% library, 20% new, and they just have to make sure the new content refreshes every 2 weeks. What's happening now, I feel, is that they got lucky with the Tiger King, in my opinion. I think the Tiger King was a lightning bolt, like, fly in the sky, one in a million shot that worked out for them. And I think now the reality settling in, it's like, okay, we don't have anything else to do. We don't have anything else new, really, to excite people.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, I don't know if this is a coincidence or not, but, like, Hulu has just had four really great hits. One of them is a continued show. So I guess let's talk about that one first because you've seen the first season, right, of What We Do in the Shadows?
Oh, yeah. So What We Do in the Shadows, yeah, I've seen the first season. That, but that's a, no, but I don't count that. The first season wasn't a Hulu show, though.
Yeah, but now the second season is.
I'm talking about season two. So, I mean, that was a, I think that's a classic, like Hulu buying FX was the right, or merging with FX, whatever you want to call it, has helped them a lot because What We Do in the Shadows is a classic underappreciated FX show comedy. FX to me has arguably the best comedic lineup of the last 10 years. The two obvious ones are Archer and It's Always Sunny. And then a show like Atlanta is borderline comedy, which I would still count as comedy. And then you have a show like What We Do in the Shadows. So, yeah, I mean, I think the thing about What We Do in the Shadows, a TV show, is that if you have never watched the movie, I think you'll like it more because a lot of it will feel fresh and original. If you've seen the movie, a lot of it is kind of a rehash, but because the movie's so good, you're okay with it. So that's what I felt about the first season. I haven't watched the latest stuff. So I've heard good things, though. So I've heard that they've actually evolved the show beyond kind of the initial premise now. So there's a lot of potential for it there. Have you catched up completely on it?
Yeah, I think I've seen, I think I'm all caught up. I might be behind one episode at the most. But yeah, it has been. And so I haven't seen the movie. So I can't make the comparison. So I really enjoyed season one. Season two has just been so much better. Like this is, I think it's almost unanimous that everyone agrees season two has definitely upped the game. There have just been several, like, I guess I want to call them like one-off episodes. There's been several like very specifically themed, like almost like character centered episodes.
You mean like a lost episode?
Yeah, not quite that much, but like there's definitely like a certain star of the, at least like I'm thinking of like three episodes in particular. There's definitely like a, you could say like which person, which character is the star of each episode. And particularly Colin Robinson, the energy vampire, his episode was phenomenal. They also had a really, really good episode centered around Guillermo. I won't spoil, I guess, if you don't know kind of what the revelation about him was at the end of the first season. And then more recently, they had an episode that was kind of followed an adventure of Laszlo, Matt Berry's character. As he kind of like left the main group and had his own little adventure in another city that was very, very funny and entertaining.
Yeah, I have to watch that. That's definitely a show which I need to catch up on, and I have pretty high expectations for, which makes me somewhat worried. But at least judging from your review, it looks like it's better than season one.
You know what I also did not realize until just now?
What?
Colin Robinson is the guy, the pill dealer from Better Call Saul.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I didn't know. It's the exact same character. Like, not even same actor. Like, it's the same voice and mannerisms.
Yeah. That's kind of... I guess he came in Saul first.
Yeah, Better Call Saul, which, like, I was probably watching. I didn't even recognize him, though, like, even though he's, like, literally the same. Like, he's dressed the same, he acts the same, he talks the same. It's, like,
typecast,
the same personality.
Man. Typecast.
Yeah, I mean, he could actually, we can start a theory that it's actually, like, same universe.
Oh, like a column, like a, no, what, the actor's name is Mark Proskish. So Mark
Proksh.
Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, no, he no. Let's say in Better Call Saul, it's Colin has come down to Albuquerque to drain Jonathan Banks's character.
But you know that means that he's also in the Walking Dead universe, because didn't AMC say that Breaking Bad and The Walking Dead were in the same universe?
Did they? That's ridiculous, but. No, I haven't heard that, but I actually feel like the character that is in Better Call Saul actually fits. If you just think of him as Colin and you like think of him as secretly being an energy vampire who's just there to piss off Jonathan Banks, it actually fits really well.
That is an example, by the way, in Better Call Saul of like how to perfectly use a character without overstaying his welcome, like knowing when to use a great character, like minor character. And yeah, making sure that every time he's used, it's like to its fullest extent. Because every time he's in the scene in Better Call Saul, it's like that scene is phenomenal.
Yeah, for sure.
So there's another show which you have watched on Hulu, which I have watched the first episode on, and I'd be curious right now to hear you try to convince me to watch the rest of it, which is Miss America. So
So this is the other FX.
I've only seen the first episode. I was not really engaged by it, and I was kind of like I don't feel like putting in another 9 whatever hours into it. So you tell me why I'm wrong and why this show is worth watching.
Well, so I don't really remember the first episode that well, so I think you might be right about the first episode. I guess what I'm curious to hear is was your reason disinterest or lack of interest?
Oh, that's a good question.
That's like, were you turned off or were you just not turned in any
so
way
I,
or the
I,
other?
I already know the outcome of it. I already know the history of it. So
yeah,
knowing the history, I was like, okay, I already know what's going to happen. And I just didn't get myself like, I didn't care to see how it unfolded, given that I knew where the ending was going to be.
Okay. So you aren't one of the, cause I think the main criticism and the reason some of the critics are not into it is it could definitely be potentially hard to watch. And I think this is exacerbated by current events where I think people are turning to television for comfort viewing and maybe not to watch the, you know, the rise of what is it, I guess, essentially like the origin story of what elected Donald Trump.
Yeah, so I mean, sure. I think maybe that subconsciously that's there, right? Like, I think subconsciously, I may not have been getting wrapped into wanting to discover the ins and outs of this historical event, because I already knew the ending, and it's kind of like, oh, like, the ending's not great, and right now, I don't care to learn, like, I don't care to see how how the liberal movement of the 70s failed.
Yeah, okay. So, I will say, if that's your reason, I think you will like the show. If it's not something that you actively don't want to see, the first episode is definitely one of the more bland episodes. And I think almost immediately after that, with like the second and third, I think the second one is, what's her face's, the Rose Byrne, centered around Rose Byrne. And then I think the third one is around, Shirley Chisholm, who's played by, Uzo Aduba from Orange is the New Black. And then that kind of transitions into the fourth, which is a little weird. 'Cause like the first three, they're the episode names, like they're named after the character. And then all of a sudden the fourth episode has four character names. It's like, it's Phyllis and this three other people. And the reason for that is pretty clear when you watch the episode, but it pretty much ramps up. And I think it's like a steady build. Whereas like, it's not like a show that hits you with like a big bang opening and is designed to draw your interest. Like, I think has slowly gotten better each episode. And that said, I haven't seen the ending. Obviously I know how it ends because I know.
Because we live in the world today.
Yes. I am aware of what happened in 1980 and kind of the political landscape that is like, essentially this is the origin story of modern politics. Like the state we are in today can be traced back, like essentially politics and like the electoral map was completely different before and after the year 1980. And it was slowly changing throughout the course of this show, which I think starts in around 1972. And I think the finale, based on the name of the episode, takes place in 1980.
Yeah. I mean, it's 1980, you can argue, is when the modern American conservative movement got defined and has essentially evolved from that moment onwards. And then it's also the moment where like the 70s, like hippie liberal movement essentially died.
Yes. And it dies in spectacular fashion on this show. I won't get too much into, I guess, like, there's not really spoilers, but I'll just say like what the show does a really good job of is not, shall we say, like sanitizing history. Like, it is.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I could respect that it seems like it wasn't taking sides.
Oh, I mean, it's definitely taking sides. But what it does a good job of, though,
I felt like it was trying to give respect to both sides.
I don't know. I don't think so. It doesn't paint the liberal movement, the pro ERA movement, and the what is second wave feminism. It doesn't paint it as 100% good. Like, it clearly dives into the flaws and the lack of the ability for them to all get together and kind of focus on, or even agree on most issues. There's a little bit of homophobia even within the feminist movement there, and several other issues that they can't get a hold of. Yeah,
shocking that the women can't agree on homosexuality. What a backlash!
I would say what makes the show worth watching is the cast, for sure. Like, this is, I was just kind of like putting together brief notes on, like, you know, the basic things that I knew. Is this a lot
to win the SAG Award?
Probably. I don't know how that one works or
what. Because SAG is like best ensemble.
Yeah. Because, okay, so here's the deal. You got Cate Blanchett, Rose Byrne, Uzo Aduba, Margot Martindale, Sarah Paulson, also known as the Queen of FX. She's literally in everything. And then you have John Slattery from Mad Men, who is just, like, dwarfed as far as, like, performances go. And that's just a testament to how good the cast is, that you have like one of the best people from Mad Men, you know, short of John Hamm, one of the best performances is just like completely dwarfed by this amazing cast of like all, pretty much A-list in TV, at least, women on this show. It's just, it's a phenomenal cast. All of the performances and the characters are really great. And it is, it could be, you know, somewhat hard to watch, but it is a, I don't think anything else has been made about this particular like political movement and this period of history. And
not from like a fictionalized perspective. No.
Yeah. So yeah. I will text you my opinion after the finale. I have heard from the critics that have seen the finale that it is very good. And it kind of, I think some people who criticized it for framing the Phyllis Schlafly's movement in the way they did, I think the critic that I pay the most attention to said that it makes sense why they made the choices they made after the finale. So I'm kind of like expecting it to be a good finale, and we'll see if it is. But yeah, that is Mrs. America. I'll let you know. You can decide to watch it after the whole thing is complete.
And that's a show in which if my sister ever decides to watch it, maybe I'll probably watch it with her.
The next thing, this is just like a ridiculously like surprise sensation on Hulu is Sally Rooney's Normal People.
Yeah, was it supposed to be this big, or it just came out of nowhere?
No, this is like the definition of came out of nowhere. It's crazy. Like, I think like the only people who knew this was being made were the people who followed the Sally Rooney's novel, which is also the only reason it got made. Like, for those of you who don't know what Normal People is, it's kind of like a testament to the problem with television, where the only way a show like this could get made is if it's an adaptation of a book that already did well, because it's a show that's impossible to elevator pitch. Like, I'm even trying to think of how to describe it. It's basically just like two super attractive Irish people, played by a really, really
good actor and actress. I have contention with the fact that it's called Normal People. And then I looked at the cast. I'm like, you're not normal people. They're too attractive.
Sure. Yeah. But that's, I don't know. Maybe that is just how everyone looks in Ireland. I don't know.
That is not true.
So it's a really good show about normal life, I guess. Like young romantic life, at least. And like, there's no other way to describe it. Like, nothing super compelling happens. It's just like a very like deeply intimate and emotional story. And like, there's no, you know, neither of them is a secret spy. There's no murder that you have to solve. And the only reason the show got made is because it already had a built-in fan base with being based on a best-selling novel. And I think it helps that the novelist also wrote the screenplay. Another thing that helps, they split up the 12 episodes between two directors, one of whom is Lenny Abrahamson, who directed Room, Oscar-nominated director. And the other is Hedy McDonald, who is relatively unknown. She directed Howard's End, the miniseries that was fairly critically acclaimed from a few years ago. But other than that, the only thing she's directed that anyone's heard of is a Doctor Who episode called Blink, which happens to be, I don't know if you've, are you a Doctor Who fan, Shams?
No. I mean, I'm not against Doctor Who, but I'm not a fan.
So to describe Blink is like this one-off episode of Doctor Who, which is, it's just frankly one of the best episodes of television ever and can be completely watched whether or not you've seen another episode of Doctor Who.
Which Doctor was it?
So the Doctor is like barely in it, but it's David Tennant.
Oh, true.
It's actually, what's her name? Carrie Mulligan.
Karen Gilligan.
Mulligan.
Oh, Carrie Mulligan?
Yeah, Carrie Mulligan is like the main character. It's like a one-off episode.
Got it.
But anyway, point is, the director of it, Hedy McDonald, directed the latter half of Normal People. And okay, so you haven't seen this at all, right?
No, because it wasn't on my radar, and then everyone's like, you gotta watch it. I'm just like, no. They're just Irish people who look too attractive. How are they normal?
Yeah. And again, like, I don't know. I can't sell it other than, like, everyone is correct and you have to watch it.
Sure. I guess I'm also not in a mood right now for, like, that type of show. Like, it's a love story, right? At the end of the day.
It's more about, like, this couple who, like, they are definitely in love and it's kind of a love story, but they also like cause each other more pain through their inability to like communicate that they actually love each other. It's like kind of a tragedy.
You're not selling it. You're not selling it well right now.
It's impossible to sell. That's the thing. Like the only thing is it's based on a best-selling novel. That's the only reason it got made. And the only reason anyone is going to watch it is because everyone else keeps yelling about how good it is. So yeah, it's very good. Probably going to be like, I'll put it this way. I'm debating which show gets the number one spot right now between this and Devs for best new shows of this year.
I mean, like, I see what you're saying. Maybe when this coronavirus starts to wane off a bit and I get and I'm more.
So it does require a mood. Like it's it's a very moody show.
It seemed moody. And it's short though, right? 12, 30 minute episodes, right?
Yeah, I think they range from 23 to 34 minutes. So yeah, on average, going to be about a half an hour. And yeah, the pacing's really good. It's like it takes place over such a long period of time, kind of starting from like the two characters in high school or whatever the Irish equivalent of high school is to kind of like end of college-y days or like post college ish stuff. So yeah, and there's a lot of like change of scenery. That's pretty good. So it definitely warrants being told over 12 episodes.
Yeah, that's a classic added to the list. So I mean, I think the thing though with Hulu, right, is that, and you've kind of hinted at it, we've kind of been hinting at it, that it's feel like Netflix may have shows which capture attentions and maybe starts out the gate and like excites people or interests people, and then over time you realize, oh, it's not that good or it's not that great, or you don't care about it anymore. The three shows we've talked about, right, those are shows which you're not focusing on the first episode, you're focusing on like why it becomes great later on, right, and how it evolves to become great. And I think that's a key part of Hulu, at least the Hulu shows that I've liked. I guess Devs was great from the first episode, but that they are focused on they're not focused on just trying to capture someone's attention from the get-go and then not know what to do with that attention. They're focused on how do we maximize the quality of the show throughout the run and not in the like front loaded, which is to me the Netflix model, which is to front load it all.
Yeah, at least the new Netflix model.
Yeah, the new when I say Netflix, majority of Netflix stuff, right? So
yeah.
I think perhaps why we are falling in love with Hulu is because it's shockingly, it's not even that big of a thing, but like it actually has the audacity to make care about a show throughout its run and not through just the first two episodes.
Yeah. So one more Hulu show that I don't think I've actually mentioned this one to you already. So let's see if you've even heard of it. This also kind of qualifies as came out of nowhere. Like it just launched, I think a couple of weeks ago and was not on my radar at all. It is called The Great.
Oh, I've heard of it, but Catherine the Great, the Russian, with Elle Fanning and Nicholas Hoult. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I would say most relevantly, the showrunner is Tony McNamara, who wrote The Favorite.
It literally looked like The Favorite, the TV show, basically.
And it kind of is. I would say the main difference.
Even like Nicholas Hoult being in both the stuff.
Yeah. I would say, and yeah, it's really hard for me to explain this to people who haven't seen The Favorite or even better, The Death of Stalin. What is the name for like that type of show? is there a genre?
Period. That... It's a period piece.
Well, okay, no, because like Downton Abbey is a period piece, but they don't like.
But it's a mockumentary of a period piece. Like The Favourite is a period film. It's 100% a period film, but it's also a satire of a period film.
That's right. Okay, I think that's the word I was looking for. Like, I would call it like a, it's like a black comedy
satire. Yeah, yeah. It's still a period, but it's not a pure period like Downton. Like Downton Abbey's pure period, right? It's not
Howard's End or any of those. Yeah, those types of shows.
But like, yeah, I got that vibe from the trailer and everything from it. But
there's also the Apple TV's the Emily Dickinson show on Apple TV is kind of like this, where it's a period piece, but
my friend's on that second season of that show.
There's a second season of that show.
They're filmed there. Yeah, I know for a fact because he filmed the scene for it.
Oh, yeah, okay, so it's not out yet.
No, it's not out yet. No, they were filming. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, your friend's literally in it.
Yeah.
I thought you were saying he's into it.
No. My friend is literally in it. Like, he has a speaking line in the show of the second season.
Yeah. I didn't realize that got picked up for a second season. I watched like
Apple picked up most of their shows for a second season because they had to.
Okay. Well, they also have more money than.
Yeah. And it looked bad optically. It's like, hey, here's all these shows we started at release, and none of them got second seasons. So they kind of had to, but none of those second seasons will probably come out this year because of Corona.
Yeah. So, The Great is very good. Almost great, I might say. I think I'm like 6 or 7 episodes in. And I think like you get what the show is about by the first episode. Like, this is one where like, if you don't like the first episode, the other episodes are going to be like it's as advertised, from the first episode. And it's been very enjoyable. It's both like funny, but also like moves into like the like darker, like dramedy type tones. It totally reminds me of Death of Stalin and The Favorite, and just like that atmospheric genre, I guess, that there is no name for, satire period. And I forgot what I was going to. Oh, yeah. I wanted to compare this one to, I think the main reason I like it so much, or like the reason I'm into it right now, is I was super disappointed by HBO's take on Catherine the Great, which came out last year, and it was like,
oh, a 4-episode. Right, yeah, I forgot that happened.
Yeah, they did like 4 episodes. I watched the first 2 and it was like, this is, I literally, it was just so boring, I couldn't get into it. And now like, it's such an interesting like person in history. So to kind of like watch a show that doesn't seem to care about the historical accuracy, like literally. Okay. So the opening title of the show, it says The Great, and then there's a little asterisk, and underneath it has the asterisk. It says an occasionally true story. Like, that's literally the subtitle. So I like how they just don't really give a shit about making it accurate. And they make it, I think, accurate to the spirit and the legacy of Catherine the Great. It's been really enjoyable to watch the character development of Elle Fanning. And also all of the side characters, I think, like, you know, Elle Fanning and Nicholas Hoult, after it finally stopped bugging me of where I recognize Nicholas Hoult from, which is Skins. The what actually is like super enjoyable is not necessarily those two characters, but the kind of like, not like on, it's not an ensemble cast, but it's like it has a lot of really good side characters that make the show.
Yeah, that is a show which I probably should watch. I don't have Your Honor, I don't have a good defense. I should just watch.
You were a big fan of Death of Stalin, right?
Yeah, no, I should watch that show. I'm not. Yeah. I don't.
Well, I mean, your defense is it like came out of nowhere. Like, it's
no, I knew about it. I actually knew about it.
Really? Ahead of time?
Yeah, because I knew about Tony McNamara.
Well, it only just came out 10 days ago, so.
No, but like, I knew that it was coming out. Like, I was aware. Like, I had watched the trailer before it even premiered. I don't know, man. Corona's made me in a weird state, I guess. This is a show which I would 100% be watching in normal circumstances, but for whatever reason, I'm not watching it.
Well, I mean, you for the past 30 days, you haven't been going outside or eating.
So, yeah, so maybe that's part of it. So I can't explain myself, but it is what it is. That is a show which I will watch, and then maybe we can do a proper recap of it on a later episode.
Yeah, because I'm only a little over halfway through it, and I'm very excited. Like, this is one where I, you know, also, since it's based on history, I can infer where it ends, even though, like, they, you know, they may go off the history books with this one.
Except I don't know, like, where it second ends. Season already.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I had heard that Nicholas Hoult, whatever his, however press his last name, he was supposed to...
Hold it.
Whatever.
No, it's not.
He was supposed to be in the next Mission Impossible, but because of Corona, all the schedules got moved, and he has to do The Great, apparently. And he won't be able to do it now.
I'm kind of okay with that. I'm more into this show I don't think I've ever seen a Mission Impossible movie, actually.
Oh, so, yeah. That's a worse sin than anything I've committed on this podcast.
That's false.
100%.
Mission Impossible. I know you're like the token critic who believes Mission Impossible is a masterpiece.
Mission Impossible is literally a masterpiece and literally one of the greatest action franchises of all time. If not...
Which one? Number 11 or...
Like, literally maybe number one. Actually...
Too Fast, Three Furious?
I will say this right now. Straight up, you can make an argument for Bond just because it's whatever, but Mission Impossible is the number one action franchise of cinema history. Straight up.
I don't even know how many there's been. Like, this is how little I know about Mission Impossible.
Well, that's a you problem.
Is that the one with where there was like a helicopter and a submarine fighting each other?
Yes.
That happened, right?
No, a helicopter and a train.
Which one's the one? Wasn't there a submarine?
There's a submarine, but it's not a helicopter.
Maybe I'm thinking of something else. I think I'm thinking of the Fast and Furious.
Oh, the submarines with Fast and Furious. Yes.
Okay. All right.
And actually, Die Another Day does that to some extent. But that's not a helicopter. It's a car and a submarine.
So Die Another Day. If you were to add up all the Fast and Furious movies,
So James Bond, Die Another Day has a car in the Arctic fight a submarine. And then Fast and the Furious antes it up by having a car and a helicopter fight a submarine in the Arctic. And then Mission Impossible has a helicopter and a train, and then it has a helicopter and a mountain, and then like the mountain is literally an object that it has to fight. And then Tom Cruise himself is a significant object throughout these films.
Well, The Great has a puppy get thrown off of a palace roof with a parachute.
Tom Cruise literally was on an airplane that explodes.
There's a bear in The Great.
Tom Cruise literally broke his foot doing a stunt on Mission Impossible and then kept running after his foot was broken. And that footage is used in the film.
I love how much of a fanboy you are for these terrible action films.
You don't get it, guys. You don't mess with me in Mission Impossible. Right? Like, there are certain films that you don't cross me with. And this is one of them.
Shams is delirious from not seeing the sun or food for the past 30 days. So, I think we're about out of time.
Yeah, we're about out of time. One last Hulu plug, though, is that come this Friday, May 29th, Hulu's second season of Rami is coming out. Even though I didn't actually love the first season of Rami.
We did an entire episode of you shitting on the first season.
I know. But Mahershala Ali is in the second season now.
Ooh, okay.
And they also completely changed the writing room of the second season. So I have actually high hope for it.
Should I watch the first season? Because I know
Let me watch.
You were a minority opinion.
Let me watch the second season, and then I can tell you.
But I mean, most people said the first season.
Yeah, but those were white people.
But they're white people who want to.
I don't care. I don't
politically correct.
Do you think I give a shit about that?
No. All right. So. All right, I'll wait. Okay, so I guess I have other things to watch. So you let me know if you approve of the second season of Rami.
I will watch. That is probably the next show which I will binge, and I'll probably binge it this weekend. And then I will come back and hate on it and be considered a brown hating brown person as usual. And we'll go from there.
Sounds good. That's like your, most of your identity, like that and Fast and Furious.
And yeah, that and like, you know, Tom Cruise and Vin Diesel and The Rock.
Okay. All right. Well, that, I guess you have a lot of Hulu to catch up on then.
I do.
I definitely think you'll like The Great. I'll let you know about Mrs. America.
The Great, I actually will consider watching. What We Do in the Shadows, I will watch. Miss America, debatable. And Normal People, also debatable.
When you're in a mood for it.
Yeah. Maybe if I visit Ireland, and it'll give me that spark one day.
Yeah, it is like it is so Irish. Like you should be prepared to
subtitles needed to understand.
Yeah, like saying. if you are the type of person who struggles with British and Irish accents, you're gonna need it.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Let's wrap up with what was the best thing? What's the best thing you're watching right now? You've done an entire episode of it, I guess.
Yeah, it's everything on Hulu.
So I will say a non-Hulu show, and it's technically a Netflix show, but it's technically not a Netflix show, is I've been catching up on Schitt's Creek because the final season aired just a couple weeks ago or months ago. I'm losing track of time. I'll be perfectly honest. I think Schitt's Creek is still vastly overrated given how much everyone loves it, but it is very good comfort TV at this current moment. It's a very just like, you put it on, you laugh, you enjoy yourself. You don't have to think too much. You don't have to focus too much. And you can kind of put it on. You can kind of do something else while you're watching it and still get 95% of the jokes. And Eugene Levy is as good as he's always been. And he's probably the best in this maybe than he's ever been, except for maybe Best in Show. So Schitt's Creek, maybe overrated, maybe overhyped, but still worth a comfort TV viewing experience, in my opinion.
Nice. Yeah, I might have to catch up on that because I think it's going to be a serious Emmy contender from what I've heard this year.
Yeah, we'll need to do another episode on what the hell the Emmys are going to be this year, because it's...
I think the next one, our next episode will be after the cutoff, so we'll know everything that is officially eligible.
Oh, wait, I forgot. Is Succession Season 2 eligible? It's eligible for this year, right?
Yeah, it's like pretty much already won.
Yeah, so like, because now like, it's like, it was already ahead, and now like any competition just like is not...
Yeah, and presumably Season 3 will be delayed to actually be like... airing just before the cutoff for the following Emmys, so it's going to be an even prime position to win again.
I don't know what the status is. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I'm somewhat worried about what the next few months will be for scripted television. Maybe there's a miracle and they start production again and they can get stuff in by the end of the year, but I generally think that we could be seeing a 3, 4, 5, 6 month stretch starting this summer where we just do not really get any quality scripted television. And
yeah,
that's kind of depressing if you're a TV consumer.
Yeah. Get ready for a couple more seasons of The Circle.
You know,
and I think on that dystopian note, we'll end this episode.
Yeah, we'll end on that note. All right. Until next time.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone.